Cameron Esposito, the host of Wham Bam Pow. This is a movie show, a podcast about action and sci-fi flicks. I am here joined, as always, with our panel, Afro Smokesman.
Afro Smokesman.
Afro Smokesman. Hey, you know what? Yes, you are.
Yeah.
Afro. Smoking Afro.
There you go.
Smoking in the Jim Carrey sense, in the mid to late 90s Jim
somebody
Carrey sense.
Somebody stop you.
Yes, somebody should literally stop me. Mr. Ricky Carmona, how are you doing, Ricky?
Very good. What it do, people? How we doing?
Also, the Lady James Dean herself, Ms. Rhea Butcher. How's it going, Rhea?
Oh, I'm pretty good.
Yeah. I want to first of all thank all of the listeners out there who donated and supported the show during last week and the week before during the Max Fund Drive. So many of you donated or wrote in or sent us personal messages, and we just appreciate it so much. I want you to know that you are heard, and we do notice that, and we appreciate it. Also, for those of you that are leaving us really sweet reviews on iTunes, thank you so much. It helps other people find us to be rated and reviewed on iTunes. So if you like the show, give us a big, give us a good old 5-star rating and let other people know about it. It helps to make us more visible on
let
iTunes.
Let the people know.
So we really appreciate that. Also, I just want to say in an effort to be honest about the people that we are, today we are recording this on April 15th. Tax Day, and also the day of the Boston Marathon. And so before we were recording, I asked Rhea and Ricky if they felt like we should talk a little bit about what happened today, because I didn't feel like it was something that I could just ignore, especially since our show is kind of about explosions.
Yeah.
I felt like would be remiss, and also, I mean, I'm personally feeling pretty affected by it, so... Our heart is with you if you're in Boston right now. I lived there for 6 years, and I know that the marathon is a really special day for that city. It's not just, I mean, it's sad. It's also because it's a holiday. Also, it's like a holiday of that city, because that whole marathon is, you know, it's huge. It's this, it's, you know, premier marathon in the world, and people come from all over the world. But then also it runs through a lot of the colleges that are in that town. And, so, like, I went to Boston College, and it runs right by. And so all the kids get up at, like, 6 o'clock in the morning and get drunk, which is, like, the worst way to cheer on marathon runners completely, like, sober. I mean, hammered out of your mind and, like...
With, like, a Cheetos necklace.
Yeah, exactly. Like, really unable to even walk straight. And you're like, you guys are doing it! But it's very inspiring. I mean, the wheelchair racers are amazing world-class athletes. They're, you know, and there's a lot of different types of people that run in it because of what it is, because it's like this world-class marathon. So there's like a lot of older runners, or I know there are blind runners that run with a guide. There is the Team Hoyt. So they're like the heart and soul of that marathon. They're like kind of the unofficial spokespeople of the marathon. So anyway, I do want to continue with the rest of the show and move into things that are a little bit more lighthearted. But it's a real thing that happened today, and I'm glad to see you guys on this day.
I'm very happy to
absolutely
see the both of you. Absolutely.
You know, I'm happy to likewise be with friends that care about things that I care about.
Tell your friends you love them.
Tell your friends you love them.
Tell your friends you love them.
Yeah. Yeah. You should. Also, you really should. So how do we get back to talking about stupid shit? You know what I mean? Like, because it's so... I mean, I think that's just what it is that you have to realize that the world is a real place, and that you also have to just try and care about things that unite you with other people, even at terrible times.
Let us be the ones to remind you that, hey, it's okay to still laugh at stupid shit.
Yeah, absolutely.
So today on the show, besides starting off with kind of a somber and connected moment with each other, we're going to go through some news like we do every week. We're going to go through a couple segments on the show, recurring segments, and we're also going to do a review of Jurassic Park 3D, and we will be back to do that in just a moment. Hey, welcome back. We all called our families and told them we loved them. And
texted.
Now we're going to talk about...
I sent some emoji.
Yeah, Rhea sent two eggplants and a high heel to her mom. And now we are going to talk about some movie news. So this week, the Veronica Mars Kickstarter has finished up. Guys, total $5.7 million.
Wow. That's insane.
I just want to bring that up. It is, you know, I mean, that's almost three times what they asked for. So, because their goal was $2 million. So $5.7 million, that's not enough to make a movie. But holy shit, did they do well.
Yeah, they did.
And that's a lot of tote bags.
Also, that's a lot of tote bags. Also, somebody, and I can't remember his name. I could probably look it up. One of our, a listener tweeted at me like, hey, you guys, that was really funny when you, you know, took Veronica Mars to task for doing crowdsource funding and then cut to a pledge break. And you were asking for people to support the show. That was pretty, like how, you know, what an astute sense of irony you guys have.
They were really clever. We're really clever.
But I guess one of the things we were talking about with that was the difference between independent media, which up until this point is what Kickstarter has been used to fund, and now a larger studio using Kickstarter. That's very different.
Absolutely.
Obviously, we're an independent media outlet, Maximum Fun is, and so it's very different and also very interesting to think about a huge studio conglomerate deciding to kick it down to the fans.
Right. I thought about that after the fact as well. Like, yeah, I guess we are doing that. But
hey,
yeah, my response...
It's a little different.
It kind of is. Like, my response to it was like, my alarm always goes off when it's a big company like that asking. Or I saw like David Fincher was asking for something on Kickstarter. Like, come on, bro. Yeah. You're
well,
David Fincher. You're good, right?
Also, as a sidebar, we only made $5.3 million on the Max Fund Drive. So we didn't, like, you know, Veronica Mars has really taken us to task. Also, just yesterday, there was a supposed tweet. This has now been deleted. Supposed tweet from Sylvester Stallone that Wesley Snipes is going to be in Expendables 3. Oh. To which I say, stop it!
Oh, is the plot of Expendables 3 busting him out of jail? Is that what it is?
Oh, fuck. I love Wesley Snipes, and I know he's been going through some harder times personally.
Real tough times.
He's out now, right? I think that he just got out. He's out the pokey.
Well, I mean, if you're out of jail, is it a step up to go into a filming of Expendables 3, or is that just the same?
Yeah, I hope he doesn't do that. Don't do Expendables 3, Wesley. Don't do that.
We know you listen. Thanks for the donation during the Max Fund Drive.
Hope you figured out those three shells.
Some other... Holy shit, good one.
Okay. I just got that.
Yeah,
there you go.
Some other things to talk about. Currently, Christopher Nolan has begun casting Interstellar, which is his new movie about, guess what? Interstellar Flight.
Ooh. Oh, boy.
And here's some of the cast. First of all, Matthew McConaughey, vaguely connected to it. We're not sure yet. That's what people are saying. It's his first pick for the lead. Mm-hmm. But now, kind of officially attached, Anne Hathaway.
I'm okay with that.
I am okay with that as well. I also think it's interesting because that's kind of a next evolution, especially if you're a female actor. Now to be in space, like taking a chick and putting her in space, like because all right. So I was thinking today about who has been great in space, and I think obviously Sigourney Weaver,
obviously. Chicks in space,
clearly. Yeah, chicks
in space.
I was thinking about obviously Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah,
I was thinking about Jodie Foster because I actually loved her in Contact.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
I was also thinking about and how did I not start by saying Carrie Fisher? Although that doesn't really count because like she's not technically in space in the same way, like because she doesn't live in our universe or world.
Understood.
It's a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
There it is.
Yeah. But other chick I was thinking about recently kicking ass in space is Summer Glau, who I thought rocked the shit out of.
Is she the Firefly girl? Is Serenity? All right. Okay.
Yeah.
She whoops ass in that movie.
Yeah, she does. So, okay, here's the follow-up question to this. Now that we know Anne Hathaway is going to space, who would you guys like to send to space?
Jennifer Lawrence.
Okay, yep. Because, I mean,
here's the things that are
involved in space. Number one, tank tops. We all know the second you go into space, tank tops.
Yeah.
What else is going on? There's going to be at least one shot of like a circular room that you're in.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you might be standing on the ceiling.
Space jammies.
Yep. Space jammies. Ricky, do you have a pick for somebody you like to see in space?
Well, if Anne Hathaway is going to be in space, I mean, I don't mind going to space. I'm okay with that.
That's, so you nominate yourself.
I would like to go to space. Yes, absolutely.
I was thinking, here's who I want to see in space, and I kind of mentioned this on, we did a live Jordan Jesse Go here for at the end of the Max Fun Drive, and I kind of mentioned this, but this is who I want to send to space so fucking bad, Tilda Swinton. I want to see that girl in space.
I thought she was already in space.
I was going to say, is she like, not from space?
Yeah.
She's not already like half?
Yeah. I mean, she was born there, but I want to
send her. She's born in
back.
A tiny space egg.
I want to see a movie, Tilda Swinton. Who else is in that movie? Michael Fassbender. Where are they? Space.
Boom. I'm into that.
Can't you just see? It's like her haircut already accommodates any number of helmet shapes.
Absolutely.
That you can possibly come up with.
You know what? Okay, number one, you neglected to mention Zoe Saldana.
Oh, she
there
has.
You go.
You're right.
That's right.
I'm blanking on her name, but the original Uhura. So
sure.
Watch it.
Well, I mean, Zoe Saldana's been in space quite a bit, but
I think Kerry Washington needs to go to space.
Oh, I would
like
to see
Washington is my number two.
Absolutely.
I would like to see Kerry Washington in space.
I want
to
see Broomhilda up in the clouds.
You know, actually, I mean, this is generally true. Not a ton of black actors in space.
Let's change that.
No.
Not a lot of black actors in space. So there's room there for at least one Jada Pinkett Smith.
I absolutely.
Mean, now that her husband and son
and
in space.
They went up there. They left her.
Other things that are happening. This, now, Ricky, I know you kind of posted this to the Facebook group.
Ooh, yeah.
For Wham Bam Pow, but to promote Man of Steel, there's a new, I'm going to call it like a viral marketing video.
Yeah.
That is General Zod, one of Superman's arch enemies, speaking in like a kind of an automated voice, and also like with grainy cutouts, just him threatening Earth for harboring one of his citizens and asking for that citizen to be returned. This is like 30-second spot.
Yeah.
And also Michael Shannon is Zod in this new movie. What do you guys think about the idea of just putting out like a... Well, what did you think of the little mini teaser thing?
How we were talking not that long ago, I believe it was last episode, maybe the episode before, about, hey, easy with all the trailers and what you want us to see, we're going to go see the movie. This is the right way to do it. Like, all right, we just got a message from one of the characters in the movie. And yeah, like you said, it's grainy. It's like he didn't hook up the antenna. He started recording. He doesn't have DirecTV, maybe. I don't know. Zod doesn't. His cable subscription is whacked out. But that's a perfect example of, because now you want to see more. You're like, why did I just see that? I don't know exactly what's going on here. There's no mention of the movie. Like, it doesn't say Man of Steel at the end of it. You just hear his voice. You kind of see an image bouncing around in the screen. And that's to me, that's how you market that movie. That's the right way to go about it.
It's actually funny to me, since you say that more movies don't do this.
Less is more.
Totally. Everything that is a big property, like a well-known, like Superman or Star Trek or something, should just go this way and be like, and not release anything specific and just surround themselves with mystery of stuff that you're never going to see that in the movie. Like, that transmission's
right,
probably not going to be in the movie.
Yeah.
So it actually leaves
so
much.
Absolutely.
Like, the District 9, we were just talking about this.
That's a great example, yeah.
You know, like, I had no idea what those posters were. They looked like real posters. They were a real place.
They had bus shelter posters that said, like, what are they called? Prawns?
Yes,
that's
prawns.
That's, like, the slang term for the, that said, like, no prawns allowed. And they were all over Chicago. I'm sure they were here in LA as well, but, like, they were all over Chicago with no mention of the movie, no idea what was going on.
Cloverfield was another good example of crazy, like, viral marketing. Like, what am I seeing right now? I remember they were putting out, I believe, like, people, like, talking into a camera. And I don't know who these people were. It could have been anybody that they got. And you would just see, like, random fuzzy images of somebody being like, yeah, I just saw this crazy thing. I just heard this noise. And then that's it. Boom. And you'd be like, wait, for what? What's going on, you know? And you do enough research, then you'll get to a link that takes you to whatever the movie site. That's always so much better than...
They could have even been doing that for Superman instead of doing like crazy IMAX sneak peeks. They could have been doing, like, I saw this bang in the sky or whatever, and like it ends up being Superman. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. So you wanted more like actors to be hired to stand on the street and say, "I believe that may or may not be a bird."
Exactly.
Or a plane.
We'll be back with more after this.
Hi, this is Dave Hill, the Pride of Cleveland, reminding you to listen to Dave Hill's Podcasting Incident, what critics are already calling basically the greatest podcast of all time, and you can ask anyone. And what makes it even better is that it's now part of the incredible Maximum Fun Network, which is great for me. They sent me a t-shirt, and so far the sex has been incredible. Anyway, you can listen to it on iTunes or by going to MaximumFun.org, the popular website on the internet. Dave Hill's Podcasting Incident. It's pretty much just like me making out with your ears or something. Okay, thanks. Bye.
So, Rhea, you brought in an article for today's episode that's called 12 Iconic TV and Movie Roles That Were Recast Successfully. By the way, great title. Very concise.
Yeah.
Also from io9.com.
Yes.
And so it goes through a couple... There's a bunch of action and sci-fi movies on that.
Yeah, it's mostly that, actually.
And it's about roles that were recast that they thought worked. So
yes.
What were some of the ones that you wanted to talk about?
Well, the main one with like the biggest image is the Avengers. So talking mostly about the recasting of Mark Ruffalo as the Hulk as opposed to Edward Norton. And I think we've talked about this outside of podcasting. I think that's the most successful recast on the list. And I actually feel like... they could probably end it there because I feel like that's the best one.
There's just 12 pictures of Mark Ruffalo
exactly in different stances, like in different. Because I actually feel like that was like a really appropriate recast for that film, and then they are doing more Hulks with him, right?
They're not gonna do another Hulk. They're not going to do a Hulk standalone movie,
mm-hmm.
But when the Avengers comes back, yeah, he will be back.
Yeah,
I know this is. I think I've only seen half of the Edward Norton Hulk stuff.
Right.
I just wasn't, for some reason when it came out, I just didn't captivate me at all.
Yeah.
Wasn't into it. Do you have you seen it, Ricky?
Have you seen it, Rhea?
I saw the Edward Norton one, the Eric Bana one.
Here's how I feel about the Hulk movies, the Ang Lee, Eric Bana, and then Edward Norton. If they were to take Edward Norton and put him in the Ang Lee, Eric Bana Hulk movie, I think it would be... fantastic.
Yeah.
It's like Eric Bana to me is just completely miscast in that movie. The Edward Norton Hulk, that story is terrible. It's awful.
Like, is Liv Tyler in that?
Yep.
She is.
And that,
in that
was during a time period where everything she touched turned to like ashes in her hand. Also, just,
well, a lot of it like turned to animal crackers.
Yeah,
but, you
it
know.
Did. It did. Yeah, it did turn to animal crackers.
She was actually like, I didn't have a problem with her as much as, you know who really bugged me in that movie? William Hurt, who is his mustache bothers me.
Was he a scientist in that?
He's the general. General, what's his name? Like, he's got like a weird, silly comic book name, like General Thrasher or something like that. You
he's
know?
A skateboarder. Now I remember. He's a skateboarding general.
That's right.
Are you serious?
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, Thrasher's a skate brand. Yeah. Got it. Funny joke. I'm on it.
We're comics.
Wait, so follow up. Do you like Edward Norton in them? I cannot imagine him as the Hulk. I cannot imagine him as the Hulk. Here's why I say this, because I actually thought the Avengers, as you know, I thought it was shit. But I thought that Mark Ruffalo was the best part of that movie.
Yes, absolutely.
If everything else in that movie did not exist, I would love him.
I mean, here's the thing. Edward Norton has a similar thing to Mark Ruffalo, which is like not a lot on the surface and everything's underneath, which is perfect for the Hulk, I think. And it fit. But in terms of like Edward Norton being in an ensemble cast of action heroes,
yeah,
is never going to work.
Also, weirdly, I'm really into the idea of Mark Ruffalo's head shape. Is that a weird thing to say?
Well,
I feel
it's
like
appropriate
he's got
for the Hulk.
Hulk head.
That's
so
great...
when they CG his head, his actual face on the hulked out Hulk,
yeah,
it looks
it's only like 0.8
very
steps.
Very real. Yeah, it's a very. I don't know. For some reason, I totally bought it.
And the final thing that I'll say about Mark Ruffalo being in the Avengers is that I got to hope for the entire movie that he and Robert Downey Jr. were going to reenact the notebook scene from the movie Zodiac.
Oh,
because that's one of my favorite movies
there
of all time. And those two actors interacting with each other like that, that was even though they didn't obviously do the notebook scene in that movie, it still was awesome seeing those two guys looking at each other almost in a similar way. Like those.
Well, I've never seen Zodiac, but I will say that I personally was disappointed that they didn't reenact the notebook scene from the notebook.
From the
in the rain.
All right.
Rhea, what else was on the list that you thought was interesting?
Okay, so the other one that I thought was odd that they included is Bond, like Daniel Craig being cast as Bond.
Why do you think that's weird?
Because Bond is constantly being recast.
But they were saying that they liked him as the choice?
Yeah, and that it was a successful reboot of the franchise.
But you know, I completely agree with that.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you hear me out on this. Because I feel like the Pierce Brosnan movies got a little bit aware of themselves.
Okay.
I mean, they were out in the same era that the Austin Powers movies were out. Mm-hmm. And those movies were pretty, like, there was a lot of cheeky looking at the camera and like, you know,
yeah,
like,
right.
That was what Bond was doing. And I felt like the Daniel Craig Bond, very similar to, and I've said this on the show before, but it's very similar to like a Jason Bourne. And I really like Daniel Craig in that role. I actually think it's like, I think he saved the franchise. I mean, if they, because there's like a fork. You can either get sillier
mm-hmm.
or you can get more serious so that later you can get sillier again.
Right.
Now
absolutely.
I feel like they can almost do whatever they want to with it. Like if they decide to make a couple movies that are goofy now, they have taken it serious enough where there's room for that
yeah.
without it falling off and just being a complete farce.
Pierce Brosnan, again, not to sound repetitive, but that's another one where it was like, okay, this is great casting. Before they cast Pierce Brosnan, he was always like their front runner to be Bond. After Roger Moore, before Timothy Dalton, they wanted Pierce Brosnan. Pierce Brosnan couldn't get out of his contract of doing Remington Steele, which was Remington Steele was basically the TV version of James Bond. Yeah.
Oh, I love that show. I love that show so much.
But then they finally got Pierce Brosnan. But then again, story, just like what is this? Yeah, he might as well have looked at the camera once and be like, "Can you believe I'm finally James Bond? It happened, guys. It happened."
I know. He just hands
great video.
He
game,
hands
though.
You a martini yeah. through the TV screen. Were there any other ones you wanted to discuss?
Well, I wanted to go back to the Marvel universe again. They also mentioned Don Cheadle being recast as Rhodey. Rhodes in Iron Man 2, which I don't know about you guys, but I actually kind of disagree with because I really liked Terrence Howard in that movie. And it just felt really weird. Like, I like the chemistry that Robert Downey Jr. and him had together.
It took me a second to get used to, but I think both of those guys, for me, Terrence Howard and Don Cheadle, are such amazing actors. Like, I didn't feel like it was a step down. It was just like, I just have to adjust to this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I understand what both of you are saying.
Sure.
Because you're right. They are, I mean, they're both great actors. But I do understand if you're looking for, like, a refined sort of a... Again, like almost like a sexy little teeny mustache. You can't get a Don Cheadle. I mean, he's great for saving people in war-torn countries, but he ain't never going to have
that. And he looks great in a costume with the... Oh, forget it.
Okay.
I make a Boogie Nights reference.
I was hoping that's who you were going.
Rick James costume. It took me a second. I'm sorry. My timing is off.
He is
today.
So good in Boogie Nights.
He is great.
Okay. You know what? If we don't ever... Listen. We're going to keep doing the show, but I don't want to because I feel like in my own mind, I don't want to replace the image that I just created for myself of Don Cheadle in Boogie Nights. He's so fucking good in that movie.
He really is.
Holy shit, I love
He's
that
great.
Movie too. So we're going to... move it right on to the next segment, which is Pitch It. First of all, Rhea, thank you so much for
bringing that in.
Yeah,
for sure.
Also, last week was our first ever competitive Pitch It. We all brought our shit in. Yeah. We went head to head. Also, Ricky and I tied.
Oh, is that right?
Our two concepts. I think I was talking about Terminator Salvation as starring Shirley Manson.
Yes.
What were you talking about? Kangol and Stash.
Ryan Gosling. Donald Glover.
And Rhea
didn't...
What the
get
fuck?
Anything.
You didn't even get on the board.
You know what? I understand. I didn't really study. I didn't prepare. I crammed. I like top loaded it. I thought you guys were going to be on board with my Terminator 3 reboot specifically. I thought that was all I was going to need to bring. It was like I just brought the threefold for my science project and didn't stick anything to it. So I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
And like next time I'll bring better work. I'll show my work.
Will you please,
make sure you measure your cat's heart rate while it's watching a scary movie, and then a different, and then measure it again when it's watching a comedy.
Absolutely. And then I'll
create
pour
a volcano
some
out of it.
Vinegar into baking soda.
So, Ricky, you also brought in a pitch it today.
I do.
Let's hear it.
I have a pitch it. It's a pleasure to be in your office, Hollywood movie producers.
Oh, my God. We just redecorated.
I love what you've done with the place.
What do you think of the cactus?
It's very elusive. It's very, very nice cactus. I'm going to keep this one short and to the point, ladies, because once I explain it, you'll see. We all remember the 80s sci-fi classic RoboCop.
Yes.
I mean, oh, we remember it.
Absolutely.
I was one of the producers on it. I was only three.
Mm.
But I knew it was going to be good.
You know what? I bought that for a dollar.
It's a reference from the film.
Yes. Well, what I've done is, what I'd like to do is do a reimagining of the movie RoboCop. What I will do is I will present to you the tagline for my movie.
Let's hear it.
RoboCop had three prime directives. The fourth one, we all know, was a secret. But the three prime directives RoboCop had, I have three prime directives for my character. Prime directive number one, uphold the law.
Yes,
prime good delivery on that.
Thank you. Prime directive number two, protect the innocent.
All right.
Prime directive number three, help a brother get something to eat. I Ooh. Am making the movie Robo Hobo Cop, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, my God.
You heard that correctly.
All right.
Robo Hobo Cop, directed by Jon Favreau.
Oh, that's actually...
Good call.
Listen, out the gates, that is a good fit for that film.
Thank you. Starring Philip Seymour Hoffman as Dick Jones, David Bowie as the old man being the head of the evil company
yes.
Omnicorp, and our star, Murphy, Robo-Hobo-Cop, played by Bill Murray.
Oh, wow.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right.
Let me ask you a question. Is he at all scary?
Bill Murphy yeah. RoboCop. Mm-hmm. He appears. I mean, he's slightly frightening. He's half metal, half newspaper, half booze, alcohol compartments.
Oh my God. Okay. All right. I think I hear what you're saying. Let me ask
yes.
you a follow up. How good is he at meeting young blonde women in Japan?
He's very good. He's very good at that.
How much will he be walking in 3/4 speed towards the camera?
He doesn't walk that much in this one, actually.
Okay.
He takes a couple steps.
Maybe we can write some of that in, because I feel like we need some slow-mo walking.
Well, and here's the other thing I want to say. And mm-hmm. as a fan of the film, mm-hmm. I think that the most important shot in the movie is Murphy, mm-hmm. is his kind of system has been messed up. And he's trying to shoot something, like a can of beans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his partner, who's a female... police officer.
Played by Amy Adams in my...
Oh, my God. Oh, that's wow. actually really good casting.
That's great casting.
So he needs the partner in order to aim the gun for him. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like a weird robo-sexual tension moment.
Yeah, it is.
Is that going to be... How much of the film will just be that shot?
a majority of the film
just like
be...
how many things can they shoot, you know what I mean? Because maybe his aiming device is off for the majority of the movie and they just got to keep shooting things.
I'm glad you mentioned that. It is off a lot of the times, because a lot of times Robo Hobo Cop, he is a bit of a drunk. He drinks a lot.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so it's a lot of them. They're on train cars a lot of the time. It takes place in the 80s. It took place in future Detroit. Now, what is worse than future Detroit? Clearly, present-day Detroit.
Wow.
So mine will take place in present-day Detroit. I don't know if Detroit has a train car system, but in my Detroit, present-day Detroit, it will. So they'll be riding the train a lot together.
So wait.
When he does try and shoot, I think they'll probably get tired of it and hang out. Maybe he'll walk up to the bottle and just crush it with his robo
okay.
hobo hand.
Now, is Amy Adams going to be a hobo cop?
She is not a hobo cop. She's just a hobo.
Just a hobo.
Just
wow.
a hobo. The cutest
okay.
hobo, though.
So,
the cutest red-haired hobo.
Now,
adorable.
here's the final point that I'm going to ask you about this. Now, this is, you know, it's not a super PC topic.
Mm-hmm.
Hobos in general.
Mm-hmm.
Also,
I guess what I want to know is, you know, how much does this particular police officer's current life state have to do with President Obama's misdirection from the top? Like, I mean, as a Republican, as all studio executives are.
You, a studio executive.
And me, you. Me being myself, no, actually, I am actually a Democrat, but I have several investors who are Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they will really want this to kind of be a reflection of the current state of our country.
Okay.
He used to work at a plant, you know what I mean? Like, maybe he was a cop, but then, you know, the city went corporate instead of being an actual police force, and then he had to go work at, like, a car manufacturing plant, and that was closed down because those jobs were shipped overseas.
Yeah.
You know, and then he just kind of was left without options and took to the streets for a while, but got street smart out of it.
He does.
Became sort of a gladiator and was half, you know, metal, and then went ahead and maybe he ran for mayor at the end. Because I do want it to be a redemption story, and I do also want...
He's a huge fan of the Shawshank Redemption.
Okay.
Shawshank Redemption
makes sense.
Exists in this movie. I don't know if I mentioned that.
Okay, well, Ricky, I want to see... Oh, I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
Also, another very important note, soundtrack by the RZA.
You know, I'm noticing a theme, because I feel like we brought you in here
kinda
a couple more times.
In the RZA.
Yeah, always the RZA.
Have you heard his soundtracks? They're hot.
Well,
they're hot.
All right, here's what I want to do. I want to take this to a think tank that is specifically political leaning, and I want to kind of make this story vaguely propagandized.
Ooh.
Is that okay? Because, I mean, I understand that I'm an executive, so I can make, you know, the choice I want to make, so I'm just really looking at Rhea on this one. Is that okay?
Yeah, I think it's great.
I don't want to green light it because I want to make sure that I have the right investors on our side, and also... that there are some subtle messages in the movie, like kind of a general, I'll just say like some pro-life messages.
Sure.
And traditional marriage. You know, obviously he's a robot.
A man does get shot in his junk area.
Is he promiscuous?
Yeah. The man who gets shot?
Yeah.
I think it's just like some dude.
I wasn't sure if it was like a punishment for things had done.
I think Robo Hobo Cop is like walking and he's got like a 40 or something. And then he just kind of is like, lets one go.
Shoots the guy, and then he says...
So he's not a good cop, is what you're saying.
No.
Okay,
no,
got
no,
it.
No, not at all.
I think
not
you should
all.
Say, no hobo.
Oh, shit. Okay, well,
You done did it again.
We are going to be back with more after this. Well, we are back to talk about the film that we are reviewing on this week's episode, Jurassic Park 3D. I was singing that for like 2 days before I started. Ricky, let me ask you before we get into the review, did you see it IMAX or did you see it?
I did not see it in IMAX. I saw it at the Arclight in 3D, just on one of their screens. Very disappointed.
And
about
not the
that.
Dome,
oh,
right?
Okay,
very
you thought you were getting
that.
The dome.
I thought I was getting tickets for the dome. And then I got there, and it was not the dome. It was just like theater number 6.
Okay, awesome. Because I want to discuss that part. I just want to know where you were at with it. So those of you that are listening at home, there's a couple things. Number one, you can pause the show right now because there'll be some spoilers. Number two, you can just listen to the show and enjoy it. You can remember back to the day when you watched Jurassic Park for the first time, or maybe you saw the movie this week. And if you didn't, God damn it, you should have.
You really should.
I can't even believe how good it was. All right, so spoilers coming. We're going to talk about it. We're going to start right now. A couple things I want to say just to put the movie in context. Starting off the top. Taking it off the top.
Topping the start.
We're topping the start. Steven Spielberg, an important thing to remember about him making this movie in 1993, Jurassic Park. So... From 1975 to 1993, he did Jaws, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Raiders of the Lost Ark,
boom.
E.T., Temple of Doom, Last Crusade, Jurassic Park coming in 93. After that, Succession. So this movie is really kind of at this pinnacle of his career as the ultimate adventure director. And that was something that we really saw a lot of in... like our childhoods,
mm-hmm.
these adventure movies, these like grand adventure movies. And he was the dude running the show.
Absolutely.
The other thing that's interesting about this, so Jurassic Park 93, the other movie he directed in 93, Schindler's List.
Yep.
Wow. And I think that that's a very important like moment to realize, because after Schindler's List, Saving Private Ryan, and then, you know, eventually leading up to Lincoln from this year. And I think to really think about the transition in film between like the 70s and now, it's the difference between the enemy being like this crazy thing that has escaped, or this biological force that we can't control, and the enemy really being ourselves. Like, if Lincoln is the ultimate movie about, like, I mean, because those are actual, you know, it's not even in Saving Private Ryan. Those are like, it's another country, and they were so terrible to us. I mean, Lincoln, it's other Americans that are the problem. And starting off with, like, a career that started with Jaws, you know, like, what to fear is a crazed shark, you know, or aliens, or, like, some storybook fairy tale, which is, you know, the Indiana Jones movies. Those are about humans, but it's not a realistic movie, then ending up at some place like Lincoln. It's just a very interesting way of showing, I think, what has happened in general in film. Because, like, we're talking about this kind of fear of nature and biology that was happening in, like, the 70s and 80s. Like, the worst thing that could happen was that aliens would come down. And now, I think one of our biggest fears are apocalyptic scenarios and also technology, machines.
Yeah.
Like, if you think about all the bad movies, it's like the difference between, you know, Jaws and Terminator. Now we're in all the movies that we're making right now basically look like The Matrix.
Right.
Versus all these movies that are basically like, okay, what if Jaws was dinosaurs? Okay, what if Jaws was a snake?
Yeah,
like,
right.
They're just remaking Jaws again and again. So it is like really interesting to think about Jurassic Park almost being like this exact turning point, because also he's using some computer generated effects. So the technology is in there.
Yeah.
But it's also, you know, the dinosaurs have been recreated through DNA and all this. So it's, again, the technology is there to be afraid of, but it's that ultimate like robot arm.
Right.
Fear. And that's kind of, I think, where the trajectory of his career, really interesting to look at because of what it says about all the things that we're afraid of.
Right. Yeah. It seems also now like the enemy is now more so, like you say, an apocalyptic vision of the world, because that just seems more plausible now.
Yeah.
Like now, for the stuff that's going on with North Korea, there's somebody who's like, you know, I could push the button today if I want to.
Absolutely.
You know, that can happen. Where before, the enemy, this is going to sound weirder than what I mean, but back then the enemy was our imagination. What if our enemy was these aliens from outer space
absolutely.
That we don't know what they look like? You know, you had that to play on, as opposed to now it was like, no, we'll be slaves to computers pretty soon.
Absolutely. And I mean, even just looking at his movies in the 2000s, for instance, which are like, he did AI, Minority Report, and then War of the Worlds, like for the same director to make War of the Worlds, which, and I know that that's what those aliens are supposed to look like, but it's also, they're robot aliens, as opposed to, like, I don't know if you remember what the aliens in Close Encounters look like, but they look like little green men.
Yeah,
like, they're actually like small, and they have almond eyes.
Yeah, right, yeah, they're like the traditional looking alien.
The alien that is very anthropomorphic and not at all mechanized.
Right.
This movie was also at the height of like things getting loose. There was like a lot of like things are loose movies. Now, again, I think it started with Jaws, but like even just thinking about that, Congo came out in 95. And so that's like apes are loose. And then after that, it was like The Ghost in the Darkness is in 96. And it was like,
wow,
lions are loose. And then in 97, it's Anaconda. So like, big old snake is loose.
And Twister, we were talking about Twister.
Oh, yeah.
The wind is loose.
Yeah, exactly. We just, like, everything's just getting loose all the time.
Oh,
that's the worst thing that could happen. It's just like, what do we do about this one big old snake? You know, like, so it's a really funny.
I actually think this movie, and I mean, I would need to do a bunch more research to prove this point.
Okay.
But I think I can safely say that this is the most 90s movie that was made in the 90s.
Just because of Laura Dern and her pants?
Yeah, because of Laura Dern.
Ah, man. No, how many pairs of Dockers are in Jurassic Park?
Oh, shit.
Exactly. Wow.
I just mean from like a cultural standpoint that like what you guys were saying. I also was thinking the whole time I was watching this, you could never make this now. It's also the most pre-9/11 movie that exists as well, because it's just, what can we do? We've got all this time and all this money, and we'll just take somebody else's island and we'll put some crazy shit on it.
Like, yeah, that's very interesting.
We're going to charge $10,000 to go see it.
But
you know?
I do understand what you're saying. So you're saying it's like kind of about like like financial surplus and yes. also like stability as a country. You know, like we're looking for problems to create. We're literally
that's exactly what
bringing
I mean.
Back dinosaurs because yeah. there ain't nothing to be afraid of. Yeah. So we've got to create the
well. We're
problem.
All fine. So let's bring the T-Rex in and see what happens.
To go back to your point about it being a super 90s movie, what this movie says about cloning. And I was just remembering, like, when that was a thing that everybody thought was going to happen super quick.
Yeah.
Like how when they made Back to the Future, they're like, well, put, you know, flying cars. Absolutely. Like, that's happening in the next 5 years. And I think cloning was in that same camp because it was like when that sheep was cloned, everybody was like, well, this is going to happen in the next. And then we just kind right. of, like you're saying, 9/11 yeah. happened. And I just think we're not fascinated by the same things as a country anymore that we used to be. We don't have a surplus of time, safety, and stability in our lives. We're not sitting here waiting to recreate our own selves in our lifetime.
Right.
What if I just made me again? You know? let's talk about this movie.
Let's talk about it.
I want to start with worst parts. Rhea, worst part of this movie.
Okay. Okay. Ooh, all right. I think my worst part watching this as an adult is the, like, Laura Dern being a botanist who's also, like, hungry to have kids, and Sam Neill, like, not being into it. Oh. The, like, super Spielbergian subplot of that. Like, it makes total sense when you're 10 and you watch and you're like, oh, he doesn't want to have kids, and now he's got to deal with these kids with Tyrannosaurus Rex coming after them. Who cares? Like, she would even. Anyway, that was my worst part. And also, which I think are kind of the director's trademark at this point, the inconsistencies that Spielberg has in a lot of his movies, like spatial inconsistencies, specifically in the T-Rex, like, fight. You know, the T-Rex comes out of her pen, mm-hmm. and then they're being, like, chased a little bit, but they're still in the same spot. They're, like, chasing around that car. Then they get on top of the cage, and it's now a sheer drop-off. Like, it doesn't
yes.
actually make
yeah,
any
yeah,
sense.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
Like,
I thought
she just
I noticed
came
that
out
as
of
well.
That, and now right. it's a big, so, like, stuff like that.
Yeah, right. that's really interesting. Ricky, what were you going to say is your worst part?
I have a list of worst parts, guys.
Oh, no!
Yeah. I'm sorry. I think Jurassic Park is an aight movie. It's
all right, let's hear it.
John Hammond, Richard Attenborough, the worst grandfather in the world.
Terrible. He doesn't give a shit about his kids.
Not at all. He walks around with his mosquito pimp cane. Whenever he gets upset, yeah. he goes and eats ice cream by himself and hopes yeah. Laura Dern consoles him.
Cries about his flea circus.
the spatial I don't remember the big words you just used, but you
like
said spatial
inconsistency.
Yes, yeah, the spatial inconsistency when the car gets thrown down with the kids and Sam Neill, and then somehow Laura Dern is just able to get down there right away.
Oh,
yeah. and be like, oh,
oh that is
here.
Amazing, by
I
the
was
way.
Like,
that
wait
is
a
the
second.
Weirdest.
Yeah.
That is weird.
I never caught it before, but when I saw it yesterday, I was like, she got there pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. And she also has a gigantic flashlight. And there's a T-Rex on the loose that, like, goes after movement, and she's, like, flashing that around. Sorry.
Is the T-Rex half ninja? Because there are times when you hear him from far away, and you're like, we need to get out of here. And then there's, at the end of the movie, Sam Neill and the kids, they're all, like, inside that the big circular room. And then, boom, the T-Rex just shows up out of nowhere. Like, what is
well, he was on his tiptoes.
Is that what he's doing?
Or she, rather.
You guys, she was on her tiptoes. Because Jurassic Park is the most intense lesbian bar that's ever existed.
Yeah, it is.
All right, Ricky, what else you got?
The T-Rex, what else here? Car locks. I wanted to be there for when they voted... Yeah.
Did
have car locks. Whose idea
well,
was that?
Well, here's the thing. You can trust people around dinosaurs. Dinosaurs.
I mean, this is just a test run. Why yeah. put all the implements into place?
Okay, because this is kind of... All right, I think that basically a lot of our problems are the same problem. Because I want to say that my worst part is... It is one of those movies. You know, there are some action and sci-fi movies where the characters... make great choices. Mm-hmm. And they also, if they make bad choices, they make bad choices you understand.
Yes.
Like, one of my biggest problems with Prometheus, for example. Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding
That's
you.
So funny.
Yes.
One of my biggest problems with Prometheus is that every choice those characters are making is completely counterintuitive to what you or I would do in that situation. Oh, there's a weird, like, snake fish
alien thing, yeah. walk at it. You're like, oh,
take
there's
your
a,
mask off.
Yeah. Oh, there's
get
like a
stoned and hang out.
Exactly. Oh, there's like a dinosaur that's like sick. You know, touch it and then touch its poop. Like it's like the whole movie is just it's a lot of bad choices.
Yes.
And I agree that that is really hard to deal with as an audience member. Something like Alien. That is an amazing movie that'll stand forever because every choice that every character makes makes complete sense.
Because some of them make stupid choices in Alien, but you believe
can understand it
because it's a stupid person.
Yeah,
doing
it. The character is already being set up as this guy isn't the most intelligent person in the world. So
these are people with PhDs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I understand them being in awe of what they're seeing and being totally overwhelmed and a little confused. I could get that. But yeah, the inconsistencies of their choices just makes no sense.
It really made me realize, like, man, in 1993, I would believe anything that was on the big screen.
I was thinking that too when we were watching it because I luckily haven't seen it, I don't think, in probably 20 years.
Yeah.
Like, I owned it, loved it when I was a kid, watched it a ton, played the Sega video game, had all that stuff, super into it. But I was absolutely terrified by all the dinosaur stuff. And then all the adult stuff didn't make any sense for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to go on to the best parts here, because I think we're all on the same page about what the worst parts of this movie are. Rio, what's your best part of this movie?
My best part, aside from how absolutely terrifying all the jump scares are, because I think they're perfectly done, is going to be something that you're going to think is silly. But I absolutely love the character design of everybody, of the dinosaurs and the people. Like, I love the costume design. It's so, like... not primal, but it's like so specific. Like each person is just wearing like one color. You know, like Ian Malcolm is wearing black. John Hammond is wearing white. The kids look like kids.
Yeah, they're archetypes. Every person in the movie is the archetype. Like literally the like trapper that's African or whatever, like is wearing shorts for no reason.
Yeah,
because
they're
like, well, I'm pretty sure if he was an African trapper, he'd be wearing shorts. Like regardless of the fact that nobody else is wearing shorts. So I totally understand.
I love how she's like perfectly made for action figures. Like they're already set up to tiny action figures.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Ricky, what's your best part?
Jeff Goldblum killing it. Jeff Goldblum. I forgot. First of all, Jeff Goldblum, you were talking character design, all black everything. That's all he's got.
Except for that jade necklace.
Yeah, I forgot also, in the second half of the movie, Jeff Goldblum just lays around looking sexy. That's all he does.
Open.
Shirt open, tanned, like his chest hair dewy.
It's hilarious. He is also very sexy in this movie.
I was like,
oh my God.
And all he's trying to do is, get his hump on with Laura Dern.
I know. And it's so funny.
he was, every time he showed up, all I wanted to see was the T-Rex and Jeff Goldblum. Come back and forth between them. That's it. I'm good.
All right. Here's my best part. The dinosaurs. The dinosaurs in this movie. Now, I'm not trying to make you feel bad about your choices. Because we went to Burbank, which... on a Saturday night, and so it was like us and 75 million teenagers. But we did see it in IMAX. And I will say that the experience specifically of seeing this movie, again, in 3D in IMAX, I am so glad that I saw it. Like, whether or not it makes sense as a movie, as a visual experience, what I was thinking of the entire time I was watching it was like, oh my God, this for me is as close as what I could be to this for the characters right now. Like, when they see that Brachiosaurus that's, like, wandering through the, you know, across the plains or whatever, when you are watching this movie in that huge of a screen with that clear of detail in your vision, like, it is an experience. It's like, honestly, I almost cried because I couldn't believe how fucking cool these dinosaurs looked. And... I just would recommend that if anybody's like into visual effects.
I was very disappointed with the 3D in the theater that I saw with. I almost felt like, you know, I'm okay with just watching it normally. I didn't feel like there was any depth to it. There wasn't any layers to the 3D. Everything looked like there's a dinosaur like this far away from me, and then everything else is way in the back. There was like the one moment that I was really looking forward to in 3D was when they're all running back into, like, the Ford Explorer. Jeff Goldblum was like, let's go, we gotta go.
Yeah.
And the T-Rex is gonna come out of the shrubs. And the T-Rex comes out of the shrubs, And that's it. Like, I didn't feel, like, I never, like, leaned back in my chair like, oh, shit, there it is. I was just like,
I don't want to, like, tell you to go see it again, but I'm going to honestly tell
maybe,
you
maybe.
That, like, we were, I was, like, shitting my pants because it was so intense how these dinosaurs were, like, I actually jump scared. At 31, I was, like, going, like, ah, like, yelling. Like,
a woman, like, actually screamed, who was, like, 20. So it wasn't somebody that's, like, you know, 50 years old and got scared or whatever. Like, they were, that's how, it was so immersive. And I have to say this, the first time I saw this movie when I was a kid when it came out, I saw it at the drive-in in a car. So I was a kid watching kids being terrified or, like, tortured in a car.
That's great.
In a car. And it scared the shit out of me. And I haven't been that scared since,
that's
until
awesome.
Just now seeing it in the theater again.
Well,
so,
anyway,
amazing.
I would love for anybody that's listening right now, if you are seeing it, let us know if you had Ricky's experience or if you had Rhea and my experience, and then if you're seeing it IMAX or not. Because I'm not always into 3D movies. I don't generally know if I care about them or not, but this did work for me. I don't know if it was the IMAX screen or just what I went into expecting it or whatever. I'd love to hear what other people's reaction were.
Yeah, it'd be fun to hear, get some feedback.
So just to conclude in brief, Rhea, on a scale of 1 to 5 shaky glasses of water, how many shaky glasses of water do you give Jurassic Park?
I give it
3D.
In IMAX?
Okay,
well then I give it 5 for that. Because that was an amazing experience.
Yeah.
That was actually an experience.
It was a little bit of an... All right, Ricky, on a scale of 1 to 5 electrocuted kids flying off a fence, how many electrocuted kids do you give Jurassic Park 3D?
I will give it... Because I respect what the movie has done, I will give it 3.75 electrocuted kids.
Nice.
I'll do that. And
awesome.
I'm being generous.
Okay. All right. Cameron, what's your vote on a scale of 1 to 5? I didn't know B.D. Wong was in this movie.
Oh, B.D. Wong, yeah.
How many do you give
it? Yeah, I mean, on a scale of B.D. Wong, because I give it, honestly, I give it 5. I really do. I also give it 5 lawyers eating on a toilet. I also give it 5 Newmans. I just thought, like, there's a ton of movies that I hate it when things have inconsistencies. But the dinosaurs in this movie, I was a kid again, and I loved it. So we are going to end off our review on that, and then we are also going to leave you with one final thought for the show today. So, Rhea, what did you bring in today for your final thought?
I was going to say you should watch You Don't Know Bo, because it's really good. It's 30 for 30 on Netflix. You should check it out. But then I saw this really awesome cover on the AV Club. They do this series called AV Club Undercover. They bring bands in and they get to pick a cover song and they play it in this, it used to be a little tiny room, now they have like a dedicated space to it. And I saw this band called Nightbeds do a cover of Dancing on My Own by Robin. And it is just like a beautiful cover. That whole series is really great. Sharon Van Etten has a lot of really great songs. So you should totally check that out. Now I'm like into that band. They have an album out called Country Sleep that's pretty good. So check that out. Check out that whole series. They even do a Christmas-themed one and then a summer vacation-themed one. It's pretty cool. So check it out.
Awesome. Ricky.
I don't know if I've mentioned this before. I'm lying. I have. Daft Punk has a new album coming out, ladies and gentlemen, called Random Access Memories on May 21st. There is a great series on YouTube by this group called the Creators Projects, who is Intel and Vice have gotten together, and they formed this group called the Creators Projects. And what they do is they just highlight an artist, any kind of artist. Right now, the highlighted artist is Daft Punk. And they are releasing these between 8 and 12-minute episodes. And they are getting collaborators. The series is called The Collaborators. And it's producers and artists who have gotten together with Daft Punk on their new album. There have been 3 episodes. They just released a 4th one today. Episode number 1 had Giorgio Moroder, who was the soundtrack composer for Midnight Express. Episode 2 had Todd Edwards, who's just a great house music producer. Episode 3 had Nile Rodgers, who is the guitarist from Chic. And the episode that they released today, episode 4, has Pharrell Williams on it. We all know Pharrell from NERD.
Nice.
And it's amazing. Get lucky, get funky, up all night to get lucky and funky. Oh, it's so great.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. I have a really weird recommendation this week. Because it's like not cultural. Well, maybe it's cultural. I would like to recommend, so Rhea is a long-term vegetarian her entire life. And then the last, like, year...
A veggie-saurus.
Yeah, she's a veggie-saurus. Yep. Exactly. In the last year, I have, like, enormously dropped meat out of my diet. And not necessarily for moral reasons, because I was raised in an Italian household that thinks that you should eat things. Specifically, like, you know, things that have suffered.
Once lived. Once lived.
No. But partially for... Because I, like, have been thinking about it differently, but also because my body feels crazy different. I would like to have a challenge out there to the listeners of try not eating meat just to see what it does to your bod. I'm just interested to hear if anybody else has this affecting their, like, I've had a long history of, like, stomach problems, never feel good ever. And I have enormously dropped eating meat. I eat a shit ton of avocados. And I would love to hear what if people that have spent a lot of time in their life eating meat, if it changes the way that they feel, if they don't. Just give it, like, a couple days. Just give it a try. You can,
it's the Cameron Esposito challenge.
Yeah, you can work it back in. I get chicken in my salads at restaurants. You know what I'm saying? But I still eat sushi. Yeah,
there you go.
It sounds like a sci-fi movie. An Italian who doesn't eat meat?
I know. What the fuck is this? I'm going to tell you, like, I love steaks, but apparently they do not love me. This is what I'm learning. So I'm just, that's my challenge. That's what I'm thinking about this week. Also, side note, and I mentioned this on the show last week, I believe the day this is coming out, on the 18th, Rhea and I will be in San Francisco at the Darkroom Theater at 10 p.m. for a show. And then on the 21st, we will both be at the Mount Tabor Theater in Portland for a show. So if there's any listeners that want to come out that live in either of those cities, we would love to see you. It's going to be us telling hilarious jokes, which is a great thing to do. And there you go.
It is.
Cool. Also, do you know when you're... next show is here in
our
LA?
Show is the 23rd. Dan Telfer, a very funny comedian, and myself host a show called The Feathered Serpent at the Hayworth Theater. We do a show there on Tuesdays. The next one's the 23rd at 9:30. Sick lineup of comics.
So you can meet Ricky there.
Bam!
Yeah, and you can come meet us.
Come holler at us.
Also, for next week, we are going to be watching Godzilla.
Oh, yeah.
Matthew Broderick vehicle.
I'm going to be drinking a Pepsi.
It is on Netflix. Watch instant. Also, I know, listen, audience, we know Oblivion is coming out this week, but Rhea and I will be traveling, so we're going to skip a week from Oblivion. We will review that in 2 weeks. In the meantime, stay home and watch Godzilla. We will talk to you next week. Until then, I'm Cameron Esposito.
I'm Rhea Butcher.
I'm Ricky Carmona.
Wham Bam Pow is recorded at Maximum Fun headquarters by Lindsay Pavlis. Thank you so much, Lindsay. And Maximum Fun, and thank you for listening.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.